Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to What Time Is It? The first international web radio show about watches and the people who love them. I'm your host, Jerome Pinault here. My co-host, Mina Goldsmith, is next to me.
Hello.
Hello, Mina. Actually, Mina and I are both in Geneva this time. Mina has left Los Angeles far behind to come to two of the greatest watch shows in the world, occurring as we speak in Geneva. One of them is called GTE, and the other is SIHH, which has been around for over 20 years. And thanks for listening. This is the only live show where you, our listeners, get to call in and talk to watch industry movers and shakers, one-on-one, mano a mano. And today we have an interesting dude calling in from California.
Yeah, we've got a great guy today. He's a young guy, a dynamic guy. His name is Jason Wilbur. Yes, he is really a rising star in the watch industry, and he really came out of nowhere because he doesn't even have a background in watchmaking at all, which makes it really interesting that this guy got nominated at the Geneva Watchmaking Grand Prix last year for the Design and Concept Award for the Devon 1 Treadworks, which he initiated, concepted, and through sheer grit got made.
The man's got balls. I got to say that about him. Jason, I think you might be on the air.
I am. Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good morning, buddy.
Jason.
Hey, sorry for getting you up so early at the crack of dawn, buddy, but I appreciate you calling in for us. It's 4:30 in Switzerland. I know it's 7:30 a.m. out there in sunny California, man. How you doing?
It's all right. I got the caffeine pills working, and I'm excited to talk to you guys today.
Awesome.
I just want to mention to
our listeners, if you guys want to talk to Jason and us live, the number here is 760-683-2652. 760-683-2652. Call us live and talk to Jason Wilbur. Go ahead, Mina, take it away. I know you got plenty of questions for Jason there.
Well, I have plenty of questions, but I first wanted to give him some more props here and give a little bit of his background. Jason went to school at the Rochester Institute of Technology for Fine Art and Graphic Design and then to the prestigious Art Center in Pasadena. He has a background in car design, and he was the project leader on the Honda FC Sport concept car. And this man knows his motor sport cars. He's often been on Monster Garage, I don't know if you guys know that, as an authority and just a general dude who can comment, and TLC's Kings of the Road.
Nice.
Yeah. So, Jason, what was your reaction to the Tread One's nomination this year?
Oh, man. I mean, I was, honestly, I was completely blown away and humbled and honored by the entire industry is, such a welcoming, it was just such a welcoming thing for me. And, I was honored. I was, to be 100% honest, I was surprised. I was surprised because I know that it's a very very traditional industry, and I know that there's a lot of players out there that have really put in the time and effort and really deserve the nominations and I know that there's a lot of them out there. So to get picked out of such an amazing group of talent and an amazing group of people was like a true honor. I'm honestly surprised.
Well, I think it bodes well for the industry that they're willing to take a look at a product like that and recognize its merits, even though it falls outside of the traditional definitions of haute horlogerie, and put that up on the stage for people to see. So that's really exciting and invigorating, I think.
That's validation there.
Yeah, I think what for me it's really kind of a confirmation that people are really starting to appreciate the creation of watches as a real artwork and stepping away from it as being just a functional product. And I think once people started really looking at it as artwork and sculpture and kind of a reinterpretation of of the way we experience time and the way we create time and or create instruments of time and put it more into kind of an artistic realm. I think it opens the door for a lot of new exploration, I think.
You know, I love the story that you told me because we've met several times and spoken several times in Los Angeles, and I was so excited we met when I was writing about the Devon Works Tread one. And actually, the watch came about a little bit as an accident because you said that when you were working on a Honda concept car, that oftentimes you have to create works in other mediums to show the emotion that you are trying to go for in the car. And while you were in the meeting, one of the guys said, forget the car, you should make that watch, because you had concepted that watch to show the feeling you were going for your project. Is that correct?
Hey, guys, I'm sorry. Yeah. I see some people calling in here, so I'm going to pipe them in and just keep talking, guys. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. This is Jason from Montreal in Canada.
Hey, Jason from Montreal in Canada. How's the weather out there?
Cold. And very snowy.
No kidding. Rhetorical question there. You have a question for Jason? Thanks for calling in.
Hi, no problem. I just had a few quick questions. Basically, I'm wondering what kind of production numbers you have planned for the Devon.
Well, for that watch right now, Jason, we have, we started off with a production run of about 500 units. And obviously we're playing the typical industry game here, where we're trying to make sure the product stays as high quality as possible, and we're not trying to rush production in any kind of way. But it's not limited to the 500. It's just we're trying to keep it exclusive, so we're just kind of getting in the hands of customers that truly want it, and at the same time balancing out our quality necessities and so forth. So right now it's
awesome.
500 units.
Hey, thank you, Cole.
Yeah,
appreciate the call, man.
Okay, no problem.
Have a good day. Sorry, Mina, go ahead. Take it
away.
So,
going back to that, the guy at Honda told you should forget the car and make the watch. Can you kind of walk us through the process of how the watch actually got made and the difficult hill you had to climb?
Well, first of all, I was super disappointed because I really wanted to make the car.
Yeah.
No. All joking aside, I mean, the thing is that I, I'm trained as a designer, not a technician. So for me, it's all about the emotional value of a product. So when I'm creating any kind of product, I'm always referencing other types of artwork or other types of architecture anything in terms of other creative reference. And especially when I'm working with a corporation on a new product, using that kind of reference is really important because it helps people reference that emotional value that I'm talking about. So if I'm trying to do a car and I can't find the inspiration or I can't find a way to, in words, explain to them the emotional value of something, I'll use a product. And so sometimes I can't even find the product I'm looking for to use as a reference, so I'll just design one, or I'll draw something, or I'll come up with, a piece of artwork or a piece of sculpture or something to, better explain the reference. And, basically what happened was I was really trying to work on coming up with new ways of exploring, displaying time. And, this belt concept came to me a couple years ago. And I got so excited about it just because I was getting feedback similar to the one I got from Honda, a lot of people were really getting excited about that specific product. And so I started just kind of, digging in a little bit. And, I'm in the design world, product design and car design. So, I have some resources where I can reach out to creative people and engineers and technicians that can kind of, direct me in the right direction. But the truth is that because the product was so unique in terms of the actual technology and the engineering that would be required in order to actually make it function, I definitely, in the beginning, there were a lot of naysayers and a lot of people saying, this is never going to happen. I don't think it can physically happen. It's going to be a huge production. You're going to have to start from scratch. And, of course, it's in my nature. Anytime somebody tells me I can't do it, the first thing I'm going to do is try my hardest to pull it off. So,
dude,
well,
that's the American way, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing for me is that another big facet of the project was really to the more I've been researching the history of horology and really trying to kind of understand the roots so that I had a better reference point when I moved forward. I really wanted to build it in the U.S. and I wanted to develop it in the U.S. and I wanted it to have that American spirit, and so it definitely captures that, I think.
Yep.
And that's amazing because you'd use no Swiss suppliers, Swiss parts, nothing. I mean, this is really, as Jerome said, this is the American spirit. And can you tell us a little about who you went to and who ultimately were the suppliers and the mechanical geniuses who were able to bring your vision to life?
Well, unfortunately, I can't state specific names at this point, just because of the project's still underway. But I can say that we worked with a bunch of aerospace electronics and micromechanics engineers and suppliers that are typically, involved in aerospace and robotics industry. These guys, really, when we tried to develop this product, I really tried to get the team to step away from the product as a watch and stop thinking of it as a watch and start thinking of it as, robotics. And start thinking of it as mechanical and electronic, just functions, simple physical functions. And so once you start pulling the numbers off, and once you start pulling the strap off, and once you start pulling the case away, it really, when you think about the concept of it and what's actually physically happening, it's overall a very simple concept. And so once you start to kind of strip away the preconceived notion of how you're supposed to create a watch or think about a watch or timekeeping in general, or watchmaking in general, for that matter, you really what you come up with is something that's really just a physical, basically a physical motion, and that's really all it really became was really a study in how to create this physical motion and create that movement from scratch based on that idea.
Excellent. So, there was a lot of chatter on lines and among watch connoisseurs, and everybody thinks it's cool, they love the concept, but then what you have powering this watch, instead of a mainspring and barrel, which is traditional in high watchmaking, you have a battery powering it. So can you speak a little bit to how you feel that quartz technology, battery operated, can mix with high watchmaking? Is that can those two things go together, or can you speak to that?
In my opinion, that conversation is getting slightly depressing and tiring because I keep thinking about it, and I realize it's very valid conversation. But the truth is that if that's really a main focus, that the conversation between mechanical or quartz, or whether it's powered by, who knows, globs of plasma or whatever, I really think that it means that we haven't really pushed the emotional realm of the actual design and how we create different ways of telling time. And I think that, like, to me, it's really less about how it's powered and more about how it feels and what it's for and how it sculpturally represents time in a different way. And so for us, it was really more about staying true to the concept of having the belts operating and doing it in a high quality way. But I also wanted to do it in the true American fashion, where it's using the most high tech technology that's available today, in order to have the watch function in its way. And so, that being said, it was really the other way around. I wasn't looking to try to figure out a way to do the next mechanical watch. That wasn't the goal. The goal was to create a watch based on displaying time through belts. And so, we engineered it in the correct direction instead of going back and trying to find the historically correct way to go about making a watch. We started with the concept and then used the most modern technology to do so.
Wow.
Well, I like that, because what your watch does is it really did push the boundaries and make people think. And when you're saying that you're just tired of, is it quartz, is it mechanical, so you're saying that while we are pushing the boundaries, the fact that conversation is still taking place is people still are framing
it from a
traditional
standpoint. Hang on, Mina. I got another caller on the line. Sorry
to
interrupt you, but the callers must come first. Hello, caller. You're on the line. How can I help you today?
Yeah, this is Chuck Davidson calling. And
where are you calling from, Chuck?
I'm calling from New York.
New York.
So I'm halfway in the middle. I'm halfway
in
the middle.
In the house.
Hi, Chuck.
Hey, my home, Chuck.
Hey. I've been listening to Jason. Hey, Jason, this is great. I like exactly what you're saying about your feeling about the watch and about technology and about the aesthetics.
Thank you.
There's a book that's a Movado book called Movado: The History, and it's very unconventional in the traditional watch books because Movado was started in 1881. And they were very, very innovative in their watches. As you know, they did the museum watch. They did watches like Ermetto, and they were the first in pioneering a lot of the different kinds of watches and really got people thinking. In their history, which is cloaked by the museum watch, most people don't know about all this stuff, but I would recommend it. And,
caller, do you have a question for Jason, though?
Yeah.
All right, let's have it.
This idea, this equation between a watch and a car, which you kind of mentioned, you know, that you've been involved with both, what is the aesthetics that are similar and that give a direction?
Good question. Thank you, caller.
You know, I think that what it is it's this constant dance. It's this constant dance between the form and function, and it's obviously the form and function kind of issue and conversation is always kind of like prevalent when you're designing something that has to, you know, function in a way. But what's you know most intriguing to me about, you know, designing a watch or creating art through a watch is that it is very similar to a car or a motorcycle or a plane. And the reason why is because, you know, forever it's been, the whole goal has been about, you know, creating emotion through any of these raw materials, taking like, you know, batteries and epoxies and resins and metals and bolts and parts and really trying to create like a living, breathing thing out of it. And I think that's why people are enamored with cars, and that's why people are enamored with motorcycles, and the mystery of it all is because it really, it's something that taps into the human spirit for sure. And it's something that it's definitely this kind of balance between something that has to function in a certain way, and then something that has to have its own emotional character. And I think that you know, sometimes the emotional character doesn't even come until, you know, you turn the thing on for the first time. And but you know, obviously you try to put up the guardrails so you don't go off the road in the beginning, and you try to create something that's going to have a specific emotion, and so you really try to create references and like I said earlier, try to find inspiration in things that have that emotional value already and try to kind of apply it in a new way to those products. So with a car.
So Jason, what emotion does the Devonworks Tread 1 invoke in you when you put it on your wrist and you wear it?
Oh, like I honestly it sounds super raw, but it's definitely in the American spirit. I feel like I'm wearing like a truck on my wrist. You know, like,
watches and the men who designed them.
You know, I know.
You feel more macho because you've got a truck on your wrist.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I feel like so
yeah.
much more of a man now. I mean, you know, I the truth is that the idea was to do something that was almost anti-design with this watch. It was with car design and other types of product design, you really focus on the finesse. You focus on decoration. You focus on covering up the ugly parts. You focus on things like that. That's the traditional way you'd approach something. You'd have lead in with lines, and your surfaces would have a certain amount of puff to them, so that you can really create like a decent volume that doesn't feel like too light or too heavy or anything like that. And
yes,
to
balance,
be honest, with
balance.
The Tread 1, right, with the Tread 1, I almost wanted to. There's some things that are uncomfortable about the watch because it doesn't have that balance. And
the Tread 1 is in your, it's in your face, man. I love this thing.
Yeah, and that was the idea with it. It was supposed to be an honest mechanic. It was supposed to take the emotional value of just simple mechanics, a motor, something simply engineered, and take all of that and take the most beautiful aspects of that and bring it to the surface. So it was really about deleting the typical decoration and things that cover up the ugly parts and really try to make every part as beautiful as possible in its own intricate and but industrial way. So there's, like I said, there's no decoration. There's no, like, overly styled pieces on the watch. It's simply,
right.
It's raw, and it's simply function.
Now, I want to ask you something. I want to ask you something, Jason. We talked the other day, offline, of course, and you mentioned to me, you know, all these people in the beginning, they told you, it can't be done. There's no way in hell. You're a nutcase. And you went out there, and you proved them wrong, and you told them to F off and basically did this thing. I think that's part of the American dream. I think that's one of the things that's really exciting about your work and specifically about the watch. I mean, that's got to make you feel good, right? I mean, it just validates your life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the truth of the matter is that if we don't find purpose in products like these or projects like these and our artwork and other things, there's really no other reason to do something. And you know, I'm a designer. I've been a designer for my whole life, and I'm used to when I'm pushing the boundaries, getting sometimes
pushback.
What people would look at is as negative feedback or you know, flack in certain kinds of ways. But the truth is that I use it as a fuel to move forward. And obviously, my experience over time, you know, helps me decide whether, you know, moving forward with a project in a certain direction
right.
is really the most appropriate way to do it. But at the same time, you know, there's definitely a rebel spirit there. And I have to say that, you know, when it comes down to certain products, certain projects, you know, like that we all know we don't really need for any real pragmatic purposes, but
yep.
really it's more about an emotional expression. And so, you know, for me, it was really more about that, you know.
So I guess the advice you'd give to any young designers or guys starting out in the same field is like just keep banging at it, keep boxing at it till you do it, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of different things that you have to consider in terms of making an appropriate real product. And just coming out, you know, being rebellious is one thing, but it's really just kind of a piece of it. But you know, being responsible about the way you actually make a product and doing it in the right ways is the second part of it. And if you can put the two together, it's an interesting contrast, and you end up with a really honest product.
Awesome. Hey, listen, we're getting almost there. Mina, I don't know if you had a quick question, but we need to close off in a couple
of
minutes.
Yeah, as a watch matchmaker, I had one of my people ask me what the availability is, and and I haven't really seen a product review yet. So how many of the watches have been delivered, and you know, what's going on out there with the watches?
You know, I get calls all the time. People want the watch. They're looking for it. I know that the retailers have been saying that there's a lot of interest and a lot of people, you know, picking up the watches. In terms of specific numbers, you'd have to talk to the Devin guys about that. But I do know that there's, you know, that everybody's trying to get their hands on it. I know that there's a few of the Tourneau stores have it. There's a couple stores in LA that are carrying it. We got a couple new places in Italy that are carrying it now. But really, the best thing to do is to go onto the DevinWorks.com
website.
And
gotcha.
And
if people, Jason, if people want to hire your services, I know you got a website. What is it? How do people contact you? What's the website?
Yeah, my website is www.wilburco.com. So it's my last name and then co.com, WILBURCO.com.
Cool, and that's the best way to reach you?
That's the best way to reach me. Or you can find me, you know, snowboarding in California I guess it'd probably be hard to find me that way, but...
I'm sure you got an iPhone. That's cool, man. All right, listen, thank you so much, buddy. I want to... mention to our listeners that if you want to learn more about the show, we are at whattimeradio.com. That's our new website. And my website is at JeromePineau.com if you need a social media strategist in the luxury watch industry or any other industry for that matter. Mina, you are at... Go ahead.
I am Mina Goldsmith, the watch matchmaker, and you can find me at www.watchmatchmaker.com. I love to talk about all things horology, and you can even get me going on other subjects.
Awesome. I want to tell our audience, first of all, I want to thank him for tuning in, and I want to thank the people
who will
download
tuning in.
The podcast. We've had hundreds, literally hundreds of downloads since last Thursday, Mina. I know you know this already, but I'm just speechless.
Awesome.
I'm very, very happy about it. We're going to have some really exciting guests coming up in February and in the next weeks as well. We got Jean-Claude Biver coming on. We got Natalie Vesse, who runs DeWitt. We have Jeff Kuo, who runs and founded Zatum, which is a Swiss-made San Francisco-designed watch, actually. Yeah. We got Richard Mill. We got Nick English.
We've got Stephen Forsay. We've got Bart and his brother Tim Groenfeld. Really excited to have them on. And we're going to have some watchmakers come on. And we're going to talk to some people who are bloggers in the area. You know, we're just going to bring a bunch of people on who are within the industry. And we have some other people in the works, but until they give us a nail it down, we can't really say.
We're going to go out and nail them down because that's what we do. And this is the only live show where you, the listeners, get to call in and talk to the watch industry movers and shakers. So tune in next week, same bad time, same bad channel. That's 7:30 a.m. Don't crack early in California, 10:30 a.m. in New York, and 4:30 p.m. afternoon Swiss time. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Mina, for spending the time. Thank you, Jason Wilbur, very much for calling in and giving us all this great insight.
My pleasure.
I can't wait to meet you live, dude. Love you guys.
Thank you, Jason.
Check out the podcast on blogtalkradio.com/whattimeradio, and you guys have a great day.
All right.
Beautiful. Great
Bye-bye.
Show.